If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Hello, everyone. We're going to be talking about transitioning your outdoor classroom for summer in the four types of teaching gardens, which bring us endless possibilities. Victoria Hackett here from Outdoor Classrooms, and I am so happy to be just sitting here and enjoying the transition of seasons with you. We had our Secret Gardens Outdoor Classrooms class this morning, nature class this morning with our parents and children. And I just have to say, I love, love, love setting up the spaces and the invitations for learning in all these different types of learning gardens. And this morning, I got out there early and started weeding the gardens and getting them ready and just sort of getting in the zone. And there's nothing better than kind of being in that zone of gardening and then hearing little kids coming down my path and joining. Just they're happy, they're joyful, they're smiling, some are shy, and then they realize, oh, I've got to go sign in with my rock, and they kind of mill about until everybody gets there, and then we come and gather. And that is just one of my favorite things to do. And the light and the space and being outdoors was just magical today. It was gorgeous. And when we started to blow bubbles later on in the session, it was just the sparkle and the excitement from both the parents and the children was really fun. So my question to you to kick us off is, what if all these experiences were happening because the environment had been intentionally designed to invite them, to invite our children, to invite our parents, to invite just our community? So I want to just introduce the idea that summer outdoor classrooms deserve more than just a few raised beds and a watering can. This becomes a thought-provoking discussion. We might ask that question, why many educators are comfortable outdoors in spring? Why summer often feels a little less structured. And I have to tell you a little secret. I have often had a really tough time in summer because of the fact that I love, in so many ways, it's interesting. I have to really work on this myself in letting go of the structure and letting go of even in the outdoor classroom. And summer really is a signal to sort of let go of even more of that structure and the pressure to entertain children and the tendency to repeat the same activities. But this misconception that gardens are projects rather than learning environments. So what really happens in your outdoor classroom? What happens in nature during summer? It's been a very rainy spring here in Massachusetts in the New England area, and it might be in your area. The weather has been wonky. But when, hopefully, the heat will finally arrive, and when we think of summer, and some of us don't even have programs in the summer, but it might be a peak time of growth for both the food that we might be growing, might be the peak pollinator activity. Incredible things are happening in our gardens that attract wildlife. There is a lot of seed formation happening. There's an incredible amount of bird behavior. Just even today, as I was cleaning up from my class, it felt like the birds were having a party. Truly, it was a chorus of birds. I felt like they were all just singing to me. But to really, I was actually down in Maryland visiting my mother the other last month, and she was saying, wouldn't it be just, she's 93. She says, wouldn't it be wonderful to know the names of all the birds and their calls and as they're all talking to each other. So, yeah, I was listening to the chickadee-dee-dee and what that all means and how they're all talking to each other. And just, again, the insect diversity, what's happening. We had a huge rainstorm, and I was telling one of our children that I was so excited about him coming because he's such a bug guy. With all the rain, I'm sure that we would have so many more bugs today in our secret gardens. And it's also, summer's also a time of harvest. It's a wonderful, beautiful time to harvest. So I want to invite you to think about your own program and your own outdoor classroom. And I want to shift from just gardens to teaching gardens. So this is where I want to introduce our four types of teaching gardens. So yeah, most schools have just plain old gardens. Fewer schools have teaching gardens. The difference between growing plants and growing learning opportunities. I want to say that again. I absolutely love that. When we are just growing plants, that's a garden. It's a garden, right? But when we're actually out there intentionally growing teaching opportunities, that's completely different. So what makes a garden educational? So you think about these, again, we're going to be talking about the four types of teaching gardens, which is throughout all my work. But what makes a garden educational? What transforms a space into a teaching environment? What roles does intentional design play? So this is philosophy, not implementation. So I cannot talk about all of this without introducing my four types of teaching gardens, because that's where I see it all coming together, where the first teaching garden is the gardens that feed. This is where we have the power of food, where children may be growing their first tomato. They may be reluctant eaters. And this is a wonderful place where families can become involved. And we can also, in our programs, create these beautiful harvest celebrations. Incredible. When I was really exploring the four types of teaching gardens, I found that these camps of people were very separate. There were folks that were in schools and programs, and all they'd had was the gardens that feed. And often these gardens, which is absolutely fantastic, I like to merge them all. But in these particular gardens, there's beautiful opportunities for stewardship, for patience. And I'm a testament to that, because this year I planted a lot of seed directly into my raised garden beds, which I hadn't done a lot of. And boy, oh boy, the radishes are so happy. They're coming out, and they're just, it took a lot of patience, because you have to wait for the seeds to germinate, right? And so imagining that and talking about that with the kiddos, there is that delayed gratification as opposed to if you bought everything at the garden store. So with that comes responsibility. How are we going to keep that seed watered? And then when something does grow, that we express gratitude that, yes, we have made food. And there's so many questions for us as educators to explore in the gardens that feed. So what happens when children participate in growing food? What I have seen is that, wow, this carrot isn't bought at the store. It actually grows in the ground and they're root vegetables. So what changes? What changes in ourselves as educators? What changes in our children? What changes in the environment? All of that, we're creating these invitations for learning how a seed can grow into a plant and that plant growing into something great that we can actually eat. So sharing examples, but not your framework. So teaching number two is the gardens that attract wildlife. And again, this garden came to be when I went on sort of a crusade with my two young children at the time, went into the minivan and really started to explore what's out there, what's in these outdoor classrooms. And I found a completely separate group of people that were just focused on attracting wildlife. So again, inspired by the National Wildlife Federation and folks that really took an enormous amount of inspiration from observing butterflies, discovering pollinators, a bird's nest, insect investigations. And this is where we can discuss with children habitats, relationships, biodiversity, curiosity. So wildlife often becomes the most memorable part of outdoor learning. And it's so interesting because, again, it's philosophy and stories, not necessarily the lessons. So what children are going to remember is, oh, that rabbit that went across the lawn. Or they might be remembering whatever they're learning, but they're going to remember it even more because of the environment and the animals that come visit us while we're learning. The butterflies, the bugs, it's all hands-on, it's all sensory. Beautiful. So the next one is the gardens for art and beauty. And again, this section, this type of garden was inspired by my parents, really, actually. This is the type of garden that I grew up in. And my parents were huge gardeners, loved to create a space that was just an oasis. And my mother's still in this house that we grew up in, and it is an oasis. I think I've talked about it a lot on this podcast. And I just feel so lucky to have witnessed the growth of that garden and everything that has come with it. And the way that I see the gardens for art and beauty is very powerful. And I just see that so many of us as educators and even parents, that we've never seen or considered beauty as curriculum. Why beautiful environments matter? Why do they matter? I think they make us feel good. There's this sort of relaxation that happens, and then incorporate that role of wonder in that beautiful environment. There's just I know when even families come to the Secret Gardens Outdoor Classroom, there's a sense of ease that I feel that happens when they enter the space, and that's kind of what I'm going for. There is an attention and observation. There's so many different things that they can look at. And the time of this recording, we're going into summer, and there's so much in bloom. So the hideaways, the spaces, they're all very secretive. So there's this connection between beauty and mental well-being. While the flowers belong in the children's learning environments, why? Will they pick them? Maybe even having a space where they can pick them. But it's important to invite spaces and incorporate and lead this into learning, where children can gather petals, where I just even had, oh my goodness, it's one of my favorite memories, is I felt like we needed an activity at our art show. We had an art show at the end of our summer program, and we had an activity which was flower arranging. So I invited everybody to bring flowers, a bouquet of flowers. And what we did was we put all the flowers on tables and took them out of the bouquets that they made. So basically everybody left with a new bouquet. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful to see all these kids making their own arrangements and so on and so forth. So that's an opportunity. And that's art and beauty. And that's nature-inspired creativity. It's reflective and inspirational opportunities. So teaching garden number four is gardens as outdoor learning stations. I'd love to talk just about learning environments versus activity centers. So these outdoor learning environments, such as a mud kitchen, a water wall, or even a fishing bridge, the kids are learning. So in our fishing bridge, which I absolutely love, there's a little bridge, and the fish have little magnets on them, and they fish. And today they were fishing, three of them, on this little bridge, just as cute as can be, with their stick fishing rods that have magnets on the end. And one of them was explaining to the other one, all the fish have letters and numbers on them. And so one child, a little sister of a boy that was in school, her brother, I think it was the number 4 or 5 or something like that. Oh, that's so-and-so's number. And so that's how old he was. So she was identifying. That was a real learning experience happening. There was a connection that was being made. And again, these spaces can, even in the mud kitchen, children having natural curiosity. What if I add water to this dirt? And it was really interesting today. The kids have put mud inside the tea kettle and keep adding water to it. And we couldn't figure out, why is this so heavy? And one of the moms, it's a parent-child program, and one of the moms opened it. Oh, well, it's because it has all this mud in it. So it's really looking at, like, even the heaviness of why is it heavy, and creating mud galore and pouring and mixing, and all of that is feeding into their natural curiosity. And it allows us to take a step back as educators and parents to just observe, to just simply watch their play, see what they're learning. I then would love to ask you the question, what if every corner of your outdoor classroom posed a question? What if it posed a question? Every corner posed a question. And what if children moved through the space as researchers rather than participants? And what if we even used that language? What if we took a step back and the invitations were there and we became the observers? And then, that would give us seeds of inspiration for what to put out the next time they come visit. So you, as the educator and the parent, which I see as all as the same thing, you're opening doors without showing the blueprint. You are opening the doors to the children so they can figure it out. They are the ones figuring out what that lesson is going to be. They are the researchers. You are the one that is setting up the space. So I want to talk a little bit about the future of outdoor learning. And I want to zoom out a little bit and ask the question, why children need nature now more than ever. And I know if you're probably listening to this podcast, you probably know the answer to that. And you're hopefully part of our movement in trying to really get children off of screens and into nature and creating healthier environments. The mental health crisis today is scary. It's just scary. And I believe in my core that the role of outdoor classrooms can play such a vital, vital role in creating healthy childhoods. I see it in the children that come to me. I see how even the parent and the child and how that experience is transforming and really getting them to think about how they want to be raising their children. I see children that are unsuccessful in other programs, but they come to Secret Gardens and they feel at home. They feel a part of a family. They feel at ease. And I think it's not just because of me. I think it's because of the natural environment is another teacher. So I'm not taking credit for that. I'm taking the fact that nature is playing a huge role in making them feel good and healthy for themselves. So educators are uniquely positioned to reconnect children with the natural world. In so many ways, we can just open the door. And in doing that, and I know for some of you, it's that might be make you feel nervous. Like, well, the four walls aren't there, and how can I do that? And much of that is what we talk about either in our Circle membership community, but we dig even deeper into that, specifically our Outdoor Teaching Bootcamp, which is part of our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. So I just want to recap that looking at our four types of teaching gardens, specifically the gardens that feed, the gardens that attract wildlife, the gardens for art and beauty, and the gardens as outdoor learning stations. These four different types of gardens, as we shift into the summer months, how they change and how they change through the seasons, but specifically at the timing of this recording, we are moving into the summer, and these ideas that can happen and evolve into just incredible possibilities. So these ideas have inspired me to think deeply about how we can support educators in creating meaningful summer outdoor classrooms. So this is a time where I also want to mention that we have the Exploring Nature in Summer Masterclass. It's opening June 19th, and it's 4 weeks on. It's a hybrid course, 4 weeks exploring the gardens that feed in summer, the gardens that attract wildlife in summer, the gardens for art and beauty in summer, and the gardens as outdoor stations in summer. So with that, it's a hybrid course. There's a whole part of the course that is online. There is a whole part of the course that we meet together live. I feel like that's really super important that you're not just getting this online course and it's going to collect dust in your inbox. It is it's something that you will go through the material, we'll meet live. You can apply it to your program that week. And then we do it for 4 weeks. It's just fabulous. We have an incredible group of educators from all over the country joining us. So if you are interested, please, 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 actually, I'll put it in the show notes. Sign up for a discovery one-on-one call with me to learn more about the program. It is connected to the seasonal masterclass bundle, and it is also connected to our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program, but you can purchase it separately. So I want to close with a quote. The summer, don't simply maintain your outdoor classroom, reimagine it. Thank you so much. And I hope to talk to you in more in depth during a one-on-one call. Meanwhile, have a fabulous day. Bye. Thank you for joining us for today's episode. Before we sign off, we have an exciting opportunity for educators looking to bring learning to life outdoors. Consider enhancing your teaching journey with the Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program empowers educators to transform any outdoor space into a dynamic learning environment. By joining, you'll gain skills to inspire students and foster a deeper connection with the natural world. Interested in making a difference with outdoor learning? Visit www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more about enrolling in the certification program. Don't miss the chance to expand your teaching toolkit and inspire the next generation with the joy of outdoor education. Thank you for listening, and remember to subscribe to our podcast for more inspiring content. Until next time, keep inspiring young minds.